Qatar says the deal between Israel and Hamas to release more hostages and prisoners is extended for 2 days.
Hamas is on notice. That option for an extension is open. We want to receive another additional 50 hostages beyond tonight on our way to bringing everyone home.
Plus, Israel's Deputy Director General for Public Diplomacy.
It would be very good to be able to establish a dialogue with young Palestinians. I think that would be extremely useful.
And later, Russia unleashes its biggest barrage of drones yet on Ukraine. We'll hear from Kyiv. Today is Monday, November 27th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. As hostages held by Hamas and Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails are released, there's late-breaking news that the deal is extended, as Hamas says it agrees with Qatar and Egypt for a 2-day extension. For now, though, a list of Hamas hostages due to be released, received overnight by Israel, was being evaluated by security and government officials, with a fourth exchange of hostages for Palestinian prisoners planned for later in the day on Monday. Elon Levy is an Israeli government spokesperson.
This morning, the Prime Minister's office and the coordinator for the hostages and missing persons updated that discussions are currently being held surrounding the list of hostages to be released that was received overnight. All relevant security and government officials are evaluating that list, and additional information will be provided in due course. Yesterday, 17 individuals were released from Hamas captivity, including 14 Israeli nationals and 3 foreign nationals. That list included 9 children. 6 of them had at least one parent murdered on October 7th and are returning to broken homes. One of them, little Abigail Idan, who turned 4 yesterday, I believe, day before yesterday as a hostage, was orphaned. Both of her parents, Roi and Smadar Idan, were slaughtered on October 7th.
Israel said it is willing to extend the ceasefire. However, Israel also maintains committed to crushing Hamas's military capabilities and ending its 16-year rule over Gaza. Again, Elon Levy.
Campaign to end Hamas and bring our hostages home will resume immediately with the end of the hostage release pause. I'm not going to speculate, obviously, about the exact operational movements of our troops and the continuation of that strategy, but Hamas is on notice. That option for an extension is open. We want to receive another additional 50 hostages beyond tonight on our way to bringing everyone home. And as soon as that framework expires, Israel will continue with full force towards those 3 objectives: eliminating Hamas, making sure the Gaza Strip can never be a security threat to Israel, and releasing all the hostages. It is, of course, Israel's military pressure that has brought Hamas to bear to agree to release those hostages. We've had it begging for a breather because it's been clobbered over the last month, and that pressure will continue until we get everyone home. Then beyond, to continue to remove Hamas from power.
We've just heard about the deal that allowed for the release of hostages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. VOA's Veronica Baldaris Iglesias has more on the story.
Israeli-American toddler Abigail Idan was among 17 hostages that the militant group Hamas released Sunday. U.S. President Joe Biden explained her case during a press briefing.
Her mom was killed in front of her when her kibbutz was attacked by Hamas terrorists on October 7th. Abigail ran to her dad then, who then was gunned down as well, while using his body to shield little Abigail.
U.S. President Joe Biden shed light on the diplomatic efforts that have been at play to secure the Hamas-Israel temporary ceasefire.
We have been in close contact with the leaders of Qatar, Egypt, and Israel, speaking with each one of them repeatedly over the past few weeks to help secure this deal. The proof that this is working and worth pursuing further is in every smile and every grateful tear we see on the faces of those families who are finally getting back together again.
The road to recovery could be long, though, said White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on ABC's This Week show.
Physically, many of them are doing okay. Emotionally, And psychologically, this is going to take a long time to recover from. And Israel and other countries have mobilized substantial resources to be able to deal with that trauma as we go forward.
As part of the truce, dozens of Palestinian prisoners have also been freed. And fuel and humanitarian aid has been entering Gaza. But it's unclear if the ceasefire will hold or be extended. Republican Representative Mike Turner appeared on NBC's Meet the Press.
When this ceasefire period ends, as Netanyahu has said, the conflict will continue. And that conflict will continue, as Israel has stated, until Hamas is removed.
There are hopes, however, that a permanent solution to the Israel-Hamas conflict can be eventually reached. Democratic Representative Ro Khanna was interviewed on ABC.
Until there is an independent Palestinian state, there is not going to be peace or security in that region.
From the Vatican, Pope Francis also underscored the importance of dialogue to resolve the conflict and celebrated the latest release of hostages. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
In a late-breaking development, reports out of Egypt indicate that the deal to pause hostilities and exchange more hostages for prisoners will be extended for 2 days. Be sure to visit voanews.com for the absolute latest. As we've heard, Palestinian prisoners and hostages held by Hamas have been released, and another exchange is scheduled for later on Monday. For reaction from inside Israel, I'm joined by Linda Gradstein.
So in the last 3 days, a total of 39 hostages have been released, as well as some citizens from Thailand, Thai workers. Those include women and children. There's one woman who's 84 who's actually in very bad condition. She was taken directly to a hospital, and her daughter is accusing the Red Cross of medically neglecting her. But the others do seem to be in a fairly good, at least physical, condition. Israel has released almost 150 Palestinian prisoners, including women and children, and several of whom have been convicted of attempted murder of Israeli soldiers. And however, this fourth hostage release, which is supposed to happen in the next few hours, is somewhat uncertain. There's still negotiations going on over the list. And according to Israeli press reports, Hamas is separating women and children, which goes against the original ceasefire agreement.
Has there been any statements, any of the hostages spoken publicly about their experiences, about how they were treated?
Have spoken publicly, or their relatives had. They said that in the first month there was adequate food. They were kept kind of in groups and they cooked for themselves. However, the last 2 weeks they said the food was running pretty low. You see, especially the children have definitely lost weight. They also say that they kind of slept on benches. There weren't like beds or mattresses, and that if they needed to go to the bathroom, they had to knock on a door separating them from their captors, and that sometimes they had to wait an hour or two in order to go to the bathroom. They were not apparently tortured or mistreated, although before they actually got into Gaza, there were some of the women had been raped and people had been beaten. But once they were actually taken into Gaza and kept in captivity, they were not mistreated.
Can you describe the sense of relief in Israel that at least some of the people are coming home?
There's a tremendous sense of relief, certainly among the families, but really among everyone. I mean, it's one of the interesting things is how the hostage families have really become everybody's families. And everywhere you go in Israel, you see posters, especially of the children. There are 40 children who have been captured. And it's, you know, this sense of, you know, anybody who's a parent, the thought of a child, you know, without their parents. So there's this sense of relief, but there's also this sense of concern. First of all, there are about 10 children that it seems that Hamas doesn't know where they are, that they're being held by some other group. And that includes these two little red-haired brothers who are 10 months and 4, who were captured with their mother and have kind of I don't know, captured Israeli imagination. In addition, you know, there are 180 other hostages, you know, adults, men, soldiers, women and men who have not been freed. And there's really no, it doesn't look as if they will be freed anytime soon. So that's also frightening for people. And there's also, I don't believe that Israel even knows who's alive and who's dead of the remaining hostages. That said, I heard from, like, you know, many, many friends and looking at my Facebook feed that, you know, people sat in front of their television and cried as they watched the children and the mothers be free.
It is a two-way street. Palestinian prisoners were released from jails. Has there been any reaction from Gaza about welcoming the Palestinians home?
The Palestinian prisoner issue is a very big issue for Palestinians. The ones that have been released so far have been released to the West Bank and East Jerusalem, not to Gaza. And most of them were either held in administrative detention, meaning without trial, or were convicted of things like throwing stones or things like that. There are several women who were convicted of trying to attack Israeli soldiers. That said, it's given Hamas a boost in the West Bank because they were the ones able to get Palestinian prisoners released. And there is a poll that shows that if elections were held today, Hamas would lose in Gaza, but it would win in the West Bank.
VOA's Linda Gradstein is in Jerusalem. Linda, thanks for your reporting on the subject. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Israel has faced widespread criticism for the way it's waging its war against Hamas, from strikes on hospitals to a disproportionate number of civilian deaths. Facing this criticism is the job of Israel's diplomatic corps. Simak Dagangpour of VOA's Persian service spoke with Emmanuel Nashon, the Deputy Director General for Public Diplomacy at Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
How challenging has it been for you to run a successful diplomacy, public diplomacy policy or campaign in a time of war while thousands of people are protesting Israel's war on Gaza?
Well, as you know, given Israel's history, it's not the first time that we face this kind of challenge. So in terms of our work here and Israeli public diplomacy, we know how to run a successful diplomacy also under difficult conditions. The events of October 7th are particularly horrible, particularly terrible, and of course it was a tremendous shock to all of us. But since this is our profession, then we knew how to overcome very quickly those personal feelings of shock and start working. We are fully aware of the criticism around the world. We follow those demonstrations. And to those demonstrators, I say, you know, you can be wherever you want and demonstrate, but if there is one place in the world in which you cannot demonstrate, it is the Gaza Strip. So if you enjoy your freedoms, enjoy your democratic freedoms, say whatever you want, that's quite all right, knowing that in the Gaza Strip, you would not be able to do that.
Some people, as you mentioned, in Gaza protested Hamas's actions, especially in the last couple of days and weeks. How hopeful are you that a new generation emerge and will arise after this conflict is over? People, young leaders who will reject Hamas's ideology and also embrace Israel in context of two-state solution?
Well, you know, the October 7th is a kind of a game changer, and it could indeed be the opening of a new chapter, which would be a chapter of getting to know each other and the negotiations. But it's far too early, because for the moment what we are looking at is a generation of people in Gaza who have been brainwashed from day one, who know only that they have to hate Israel and to kill Israelis. And we have seen those unfortunate results also on October 7th with the massacre of thousands of innocent Israelis. I would say that maybe in the middle term or long term, it would be very good to be able to establish a dialogue with young Palestinians. I think that would be extremely useful also in terms of peaceful relations here in the region, but we are very, very far from that.
What role do you expect China to play as the president of the UN Security Council?
Well, with China, you know, what worries us also is the rise of anti-Semitism. For the first time ever, we see anti-Semitic sentiments expressed in China on social media. And this is something that should not exist. And we call upon the Chinese government to make sure that this disappears. So we are a little bit worried. What we see, and I think that it comes as no surprise, is that at the end of the day, the world is divided in two camps, the democratic camp and the anti-democratic camp. And in the democratic camp, you can find the United States, the European countries, Israel, other countries as well around the world. In the anti-democratic camp, we find those very countries that you mentioned, which are of an autocratic nature, Russia, China, Iran, other countries as well. At least if there is, I would say, if there is one small silver lining in this terrible dark cloud of October 7th, it's the fact that it has torn off the masks of the faces of everybody. Now it is clear who is in favor of democracy and freedom and who is in favor of something else.
Mr. Ambassador, are you surprised that there have been no large anti-Israeli protests in Iran, despite the fact that the government has been pushing anti-Semitic policies for over four decades?
Well, we know and we have seen in the last years that there is a big difference to be made between the Iranian people and the Iranian government. The Iranian people, broadly speaking, as far as we can see, is not anti-Israel and is not anti-Semitic. We have followed very closely also the internal protests in Iran in the last couple of years. So we know that there is a growing disagreement between the government and the people. So it would make sense indeed that the people will not adhere to those anti-Semitic policies of the government.
That's Emmanuel Nachshon, Deputy Director General for Public Diplomacy at Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He was speaking with VOA's Simak Dagampour. We've reported on this show before about the disturbing rise in anti-Semitism and anti-Arab or anti-Muslim crime, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. This past weekend saw what may be another example. Three Palestinian Americans were shot as they were walking down the street in the northern New England city of Burlington, Vermont. The AP's Jennifer King has the latest.
A suspect is in custody after the Vermont shooting of three young men of Palestinian descent. ATF agents arrested 48-year-old Jason Eaton Sunday afternoon at his apartment building near the scene of a shooting on Saturday near the University of Vermont in Burlington. Police Chief John Murad says the three victims, all 20-year-old Palestinian-American college students, were speaking some Arabic as they were walking during a holiday visit when a white man with a gun approached them and discharged at least four rounds from a pistol without speaking. Two of the three victims were wearing the black and white Palestinian keffiyeh scarves. The chief says in this charged moment, no one can look at this incident and not suspect it may have been a hate-motivated crime. He urged the public not to jump to conclusions. I'm Jennifer King.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. An update from Kyiv in just a moment. First, though, a look at the crisis in Ukraine from our Washington newsroom. Russia launched its largest drone strike to date on Ukraine over the weekend. Kyiv said it destroyed all but one of the drones, and falling debris caused several injuries and damaged buildings. A top UN official called for continued solidarity with Ukraine. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
An air raid siren blares amid a Russian drone attack on the Ukrainian capital. The head of the capital city administration, Serhiy Popko, called it the most massive air attack by drones on Kyiv. Ukraine's Air Force said it shot down 74 of the 75 Iranian-made drones. The attack started Saturday, coming in waves for more than 6 hours and leaving 17,000 people without power in the region, according to Ukraine's energy ministry. It also came on the 90th anniversary of the Holodomor famine genocide. Holodomor, which means death by hunger or starvation, was a campaign through 1932 and 33 orchestrated by then-Soviet leader Joseph Stalin to seize control of Ukraine's grain production. at least 3.5 to 7 million Ukrainians died. According to the University of Minnesota, those numbers may be understated.
Caro Presidente Zelensky, caro Volodymyr.
It was against this backdrop that Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni recorded a video message to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Holodomor Memorial Day. She said her government welcomed Kyiv's resolve to continue the Grain from Ukraine humanitarian food program, announcing a further contribution of $2.2 million to the effort. As part of the program, Ukraine partnered with countries and private sector donors to supply its grain to countries in Africa and Asia that face malnutrition and hunger. At a recent meeting of the UN Security Council, Ukraine's permanent representative to the United Nations accused Moscow of again using similar tactics as those in the early 1930s. Ukraine's permanent representative to the United Nations, Serhiy Kislytsia, on UN TV as provided by the Associated Press.
Starvation is one of Russia's methods of warfare, has encompassed various components since day one of the full-scale invasion. These include blocking Ukrainian food exports, shelling Ukrainian ports and grain stores, mining Ukrainian fertile soils and turning them into battlefields.
Following Russia's drone strikes, Zelensky and European leaders met in Kyiv at an international summit on food security. He said foreign partners would supply Ukraine with vessels to accompany and secure convoys of cargo ships from Ukraine's ports. Zelensky added his country hoped to solve air defense shortages through new supplies from partners and increasing Ukraine's own production capacity before another air raid siren cut short the joint news conference. At least 5 civilians in Kyiv were wounded in Russia's assault on the capital, with several buildings damaged from falling debris, including a kindergarten. Those injured include an 11-year-old child, according to Mayor Vitaly Klitschko. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
We heard in Arash's report that Kyiv was targeted by Russian drones for 6 hours beginning on Saturday night. Anna Chernikova was there, and she told VOA's Lori London what it was like.
Saturday night was probably one of the toughest nights since full-scale invasion in terms of the intensity of the attacks and particularly intensity of drone attacks. And I personally didn't sleep for the whole night as most of Kyiv citizens. It was quite loud. The drones were attacking Kyiv for more than 6 hours, starting in 2 o'clock in the morning and ending almost at 9 o'clock in the morning. And air defense was active for all this time. So it was, you know, kind of couple of waves of the drones going and targeting Kyiv. And also there were reports from air defense during the attack that drones are on the way to other regions, but then at one point they suddenly turned and all of them basically were targeting the capital. So it was quite a big stress for adults, for children, for animals, for pets as well. A lot of people were hospitalized even with stress, and also pets are suffering quite much.
And did you have to take shelter underground in the bomb shelter when that was happening?
We were taking shelter, yes, because it was quite dangerous this night, and we were taking shelter. We did not go to the parking lot this time, but we were taking shelter in our apartment in a special place.
There are obviously concerns about potential attacks during the upcoming winter season, which sounds like it's already upon you.
Yes, you're right. This weekend was also a weekend that Ukraine was covered with a bad snowstorm, particularly south regions of the country and central part of the country. Kyiv, the capital, is also under quite a heavy snowfall. And of course, the temperature goes down. And this is actually what Ukrainians expected, that Russian forces will start more intensive attacks when the temperature goes down. And it looks like that this period has begun and Ukrainians expect more.
Lori London is the host of Flashpoint Ukraine here on VOA. She was speaking to our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova. And that's going to wrap it up for today's program. There's more coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
Stay up to date with VOA podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.